Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santaferadiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. And we're talking this week about both the Santa Fe Film Festival and the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. I'm delighted to welcome to the program Jacques Paisner. He's executive director of the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. And Kimmy Green joins us. She's co-chair of the advisory board for the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Great to see you.
Great to see you and be here.
Now, the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival, we can't emphasize this enough, is not the Santa Fe Film Festival. They're happening at the same time, the same week. They both have terrific films coming from all over the place, but they're distinct and they're different entities. What is the Independent Film Festival all about?
Well, we're showing 100 films at 5 venues over 5 days. You know, we've got films from all over the world. We've got filmmakers coming in to represent their films. Kirby Dick, and
who we'll be talking to in just a little while.
Yeah, who's just my hero and just, you know, doing the kind of work that I think is so important and that the fest really loves to get behind.
Yvonne Latty will be also coming in, and she did a wonderful short on the Navajo Nation's issues with uranium called Sacred Poison.
Yes. Now, the theme of this year's Santa Fe Independent Film Festival is basically social justice issues.
Yeah, we're really looking at a lot of programs that reflect social justice. We've got our healthcare awareness, cancer awareness. We've got 2 veterans programs. And, you know, we're just looking at a program that's about so many issues that we find so important, cystic fibrosis and
the environment.
Yeah, environmental justice. We've got a film called If a Tree Falls about Elf by Academy Award winner Marshall Curry. And he was really bummed that he couldn't be in Santa Fe this week because he sounded very excited about what we're doing and was really honored that we're showing such an important film.
The films are Wednesday through Sunday. It's a lot of films in a lot of places. Warehouse 21 is kind of your main venue?
Yes.
And so you'll be showing a lot of films there from morning through night. How did you choose the films? What are your, I mean, did you put out the call for social justice and environmental films and then see what came in?
No, you know, we built the theme around the program when we started getting all these films and saying, oh, wow, you know, we match them up with the different programs. And by the time we had all 100 of them, it was pretty obvious that this year's theme was social justice.
That's interesting. So independent filmmakers in the U.S., that's what they're working on, it seems.
Yeah, and also all over the world, like Iyada Lee's film, Cultures of Resistance. She visited 13 countries, excuse me, and documented the artists there that are in these impoverished nations making art about their political struggle.
I have to say, Cultures of Resistance, that's a very good film. It's amazing that she was able to go from one country to another, and there's political cartoonists, and there's graffiti artists, and there's people doing all sorts of things. But it's really basically a tour of war zones today.
Yeah, I mean, she's very brave, and she was able to raise a lot of dough to make a really important picture. And, you know, that we're able to screen it in Santa Fe, we just feel like it's such a perfect fit. That one's Thursday at 7 p.m. at Warehouse 21. We announced very early that Kirby Dick would be joining us for the fest and accepting the Santa Fe IFF American Filmmaker Award. And I think that put us on the radar of the filmmakers who had made The Power of Two, which is a film about twin sisters who are Japanese Americans and both born with cystic fibrosis. And one's had a double lung transplant. The other's had 2 double lung transplants. And they'll both be here in Santa Fe to help raise awareness about cystic fibrosis and to represent the picture.
They're the archetypical Americans with courage and a can-do attitude. I mean, the film opens with them swimming. You're like, these girls
right.
with lung transplants are swimming just like anybody. It's amazing.
Yeah. And yep. also the work that they've done in really raising awareness in Japan about organ transplants, et cetera, is really remarkable. They've taken it just beyond even the cystic fibrosis component.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know, they're just the sweetest. They're so, so nice. You know, the little correspondences I've had with them have just been so uplifting. And, you know, the part that really broke my heart about the film was when they were healthy and they're traveling and they just finally got to be sisters after, you know, so many hardships and such a struggle.
So, well, we'll be talking to Kirby Dick in a moment, but let's just introduce him. He's getting an award at this film festival, and he made one of my favorite documentaries called This Film Is Not Yet Rated, which is going to be screening at the Lenzic.
Yeah, that'll be Friday the 21st at the Lenzic at 7 p.m., and Kirby Dick will be there doing Q&A. He's just my hero in so many ways, and we feel like he should be every young filmmaker's hero. When he made This Film Is Not Yet Rated, he really exposed the rating system and censorship. And, you know, what we're really about is the freedom of ideas and information being available to people. And when he took an organization like the Motion Picture Association of America that tells you whether a film's rated R, whether it's rated NC-17, and what the distribution becomes after that, and kind of turned them on their head and exposed who their secret screening committee was.
I know. I mean, that's the extraordinary thing about this documentary. It's like all these ratings, NC-17 and PG or whatever those things are, a totally secret committee of people that he had to hire a private detective to follow them around and even figure out who the heck they are, is making the decisions about what young people should and shouldn't see in this world.
Yes, and shaping the way they're thinking about things.
Yeah.
It's very arbitrarily done.
Well, and not just young people. You know, if a movie is rated R, it can gain distribution on a much wider scale. A movie rated NC-17, even something like Henry and June, can kind of fall by the wayside. And it's really too bad because, you know, what we're able to see and, you know, the information we get shapes our ideas and our whole consciousness.
Or Team America World Police.
Certainly.
We're talking to Jacques Paysner and Kimmy Green about the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. So how did you get hundreds of submissions? How did you choose?
Yeah.
It must have been a huge process.
Well, we got about 400 submissions. We waived about over 100 entry fees we waived for the filmmakers who wrote to us and said, hey, we'd really like to be a part of this, but we spent every dime we had on our picture. And we said, hey, well, you know, we're happy to waive your entry fee. That's part of something we can provide to a community of filmmakers that, you know, we feel like it's really our duty and mission to support.
Is it possible for people to submit online these days?
Yes.
Yeah. They send us online screeners. You know, which is a cool thing. You know, of course, it's nice to have DVD copies and to give to someone like Mary Charlotte or Rob DeWalt. But it's also pretty cool to be able to have, you know, people on our screening committee in Alabama and just shoot them a quick little instant online screener. And then they can be a part of the decision-making process and, you know, deciding which films come to Santa Fe.
And then you had a big decision process to get down to, what, 100 and some films?
Yeah, I mean it was tough. You know, there was a couple that we didn't get to show this year that we would have liked to. We get a lot of good ones. You know, there's a lot of film festivals in America, and you know we feel like we're on the cutting edge of screening movies and which movies are screened. And we got really lucky that, you know, the filmmakers noticed that we were screening socially conscious movies and sent us their socially conscious movies.
There's a film that's being shown called Cancer Pants, and there's some Cancer Awareness Month activities going on around that film. I got a call from
Mark Daly, called.
Yeah, Mark Daly, who's a teacher at one of the public schools.
The film's by a woman called Nevi Owens, and we felt it was really timely for October being Breast Cancer Awareness Month to show Cancer Pants, a movie about breast cancer. And, you know, that movie, I felt like the humanity of it was very, very clear, and that this is a couple going through a process that, you know, has touched everyone's life. You know, everyone I've ever known has had cancer be a part of their life or had cancer themselves. Sitting right next to us, Kimmy Green is a cancer survivor, and that Nevi Owens was able to get in touch with us and get the film to us, and we were able to accept it early, helped, you know, raise more awareness about the film and other film festivals in the meantime, and thereby raise awareness about breast cancer.
And what's great is that Rochelle will be joining us, who is the cancer survivor, and
right,
is looking forward to being able to meet with other cancer survivors here in Santa Fe.
So in addition to all of that, there's all kinds of shorts that people can see. There's panel discussions, and there's parties.
Yes.
We have great parties. The Filmmaker Lounge will be at the former Corazon space on Guadalupe Street, and it's sponsored by IATSE Local 480, the Cowgirl Hall of Fame, Philip and Barbara Goodwin. And actually, most recently, Max's Late Night Cafe. Max has agreed to let the filmmakers use their internet.
And Santa Fe Brewery will be providing the wonderful free beer from here.
Ah!
And Fiasco Wines will be providing wine. And this is, you know, something really cool that the filmmakers who travel to Santa Fe and are here for the week to represent their films have a place to go and, you know, get together and commiserate and talk about their next project.
Well, I have to say, the Santa Fe Film Festival, which we're also going to be talking to and interviewing their filmmakers as well, the way it used to be, those parties were such places of incredible energy because you have all these people who are not only amazingly creative filmmakers, but they're also amazingly creative money raisers and survivors in this world that doesn't really support the arts all that much.
Well, you know, Santa Fe is a great place when it comes to supporting the arts. You know, this is really a community and a city that'll get behind an art event or behind artists. And, you know, the Santa Fe Film Festival was a great thing. And I grew up, you know, going to their movies and going to their parties. That's where I met Kathy Smith, who's now our event director. And, you know, we're just really excited that, you know, we can take it to the next level and, you know, really make it a sustainable, vibrant, film-going scene here in Santa Fe and use the October time to really effectively extend the tourist season. Let it be Wine and Chili, Balloon Fiesta, then Santa Fe Independent Film Fest.
Jacques Paisner is the executive director of the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival, which is on the web at santafeindependentfilmfestival.com. Kimmy Green is the co-chair of the advisory board. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks,
Mary.
Thank
you,
Mary.
Charlotte.
And we're going to hear from Kirby Dick in just a few minutes. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'm very happy now to welcome to the Radio Cafe Kirby Dick. He is a writer, director, and producer. His film, This Film Is Not Yet Rated, is screening on Friday, October 21st at 7 o'clock at the Lensic here in Santa Fe as part of the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. And another film of his, Sick, The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Supermasochist, is screening the same day, Friday, October 21st at 5 o'clock at Warehouse 21. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
You will also be accepting an award from the festival for, it's the American Filmmaker Award, and you'll also be speaking at the Aztec Cafe, which is a great treat for us, on Saturday morning, the 22nd of October at 10 in the morning. Let's talk for a moment about this 2006 documentary, This Film Is Not Yet Rated. I loved that movie when I saw it. I saw it not too long after it came out. And in that film, you expose this whole secretive netherworld of the people who rate the films that we see, that give them a rated R, whatever rating. And for those people who have not yet seen this film, what did you find out about the people who do these ratings? What kind of folks are they? What are their agendas?
Well, the people who actually do the ratings are actually just parents. They have no other qualifications whatsoever. And these are parents that are selected by the MPAA. Now, the MPAA is the trade organization and lobbying arm for the six major film studios who, of course, release most of the films in this country. So, but this ratings organization doesn't only rate their films. It rates all the films, the independent films, foreign films. So they have complete control of the rating system. Now, these people are only parents, completely chosen by the MPA, and it's a completely secret group. Nobody gets to see who they are, really, or how they do their ratings. And so for 40 or 50 years, it had been set up this way, and major news organizations had tried to get inside and find out how this was run and who they were. And they were never able to do it. So what we did is we hired a very colorful private investigator and followed her around, and she actually got the names of all these people, and we found out how it really is run.
And how is it really run? I mean, give us a hint.
Well, it's no surprise that the films by the studios are rated much less harshly than films by independents, particularly when it comes to things like sexual content. Because most of the independent films, or many of the independent films, focus on adult sexual content and, how adults, just the whole interactions between adults and sexuality. What all filmmakers, it's an important subject for all filmmakers, certainly foreign filmmakers as well. Whereas the studios, a lot of their films, the great majority of them, I would say even, are violent films, and those films got much less harshly rated. And now, again, they are the people who are choosing these secret raters, and they have direct access and communication with these raters, whereas independent filmmakers do not have that kind of access at all.
What kind of influence does a rating have on who sees the film?
Well, it could, obviously if you have an NC-17 rating, then, it'll limit the people who can see that film. And it also has influence in terms of, certain NC films can't be advertised in certain papers, can't be advertised in certain television markets. And so, for example, you take a film like Batman, which, the last Batman film, which really should have gotten an R rating because of the amount of violence. And in comparison to other films, it would have absolutely got an R rating if it was given a fair rating. It got a PG-13 rating, which allowed many more young children, children really at any age, as long as their parents said it was okay, to come and see this film. Now, their parents have no idea. They think, it's a Batman film. They're thinking, Batman was kind of a sweet comic character, when they were growing up. So it really is doing a disservice to parents. It's not accurately reflecting what's in the film.
I was thinking when I was watching your film and afterwards, I mean, you get a really strict rating if there's, a lesbian kiss or a breast or something like that in the film. But if somebody cuts another person open with a chainsaw and their blood and guts all fall out on the floor, that doesn't seem to really faze anybody. What if it were just the opposite? What if you could have lots of sex, but you couldn't even have somebody slap somebody across the face without getting a really rough, really high rating? In other words, excluding teenagers from the film. What would our society be like if it just flipped around?
Well, I don't think, movies are really the cause of violence in our society. So I don't think we can really blame films for that. But I think what I would like to see, what I'd like to see is that there be no rating, what there be is information. With the Internet and everything, you could have much more information given to parents about what was in these films. And then parents themselves could choose, as opposed to deciding that you want to restrict certain people from seeing this film and allow certain other people to go see these violent films. I mean, in terms of the statistics on this, there's really no statistical evidence at all that a sexually explicit film in any way damages teenagers. There's no evidence of that at all. There is some evidence that's being debated that it might have some negative, the violence might have some negative impact on teenagers. But again, my preference would be for no ratings. The information is out there, and then parents to allow their children to go see it.
Or, it would be interesting also if there was a separate rating for sexual content and violent content. I think the way people put those two words together as if they had anything to do with each other is kind of weird. Sex is part of all of our lives, and right, for many people, violence really is something quite rare and horrible.
Right. I'm sort of taking the other side here, but, violence, if you restrict the showing of any violence, then pretty soon you can have anti-war films, when in fact, that's one of the things I cover. There's a documentary that was made about 5 years ago that was showing what it was like in Iraq for soldiers, and they were swearing, and because of that, it got an R rating, and so children that were within a couple of years of deciding whether to go in the army couldn't even see what the experience of that was like, and that I think is completely inappropriate, but I think most parents are much more concerned about the effect of violence and seeing too much violence than they are about the effect of seeing, like you said, a breast or something like that. I mean, all that is available on the internet now anyway.
Right, right. What effect, if any, did your film have in terms of the transparency of this whole rating system?
It made it slightly more transparent. They came out with a whole series of changes that they were going to make. Now they claimed that my film had absolutely nothing to do with it, but it just happened to happen, within months after my film was released. So I'm sure it did. And they came out with a whole list of changes that were going to improve the rating system. What was interesting is they did not, even though they said they were going to do it, I think about half of those changes they never really did, because as soon as after this blew over, they felt like they just wanted to, keep business as usual, because this is a very sweet setup for them. They control the actual people who rate their films and who rate their competition films, too, because independents are in competition with the studios. And a rating can determine how much money a film makes. So they don't want to change the system that they have now.
We're talking to writer, director, and producer Kirby Dick. We've got a few minutes left. I have not seen this film yet, but tell us a little bit about it. Give us a hint of what it's about. Sick: The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Supermasochist.
Well, it's a film about a man who was an artist. He was born with cystic fibrosis, and he was a very extreme masochist. And so it's a film about how his illness, affected his art and his... Actually, it's a film about how his sort of sexual practice affected his art and his life. And it's very personal, very powerful. It won an award at Sundance when it premiered there. Like I said, he was a friend of mine, and it's very... it's very explicit. So, I mean, this is a film that should get an NC-17 rating. I would not argue with that at all. I mean,
right.
It's a film for adults or for, for teenagers who are, feel like they can see this kind of material. But it's very powerful, very emotional. I personally think it's one of the most emotional documentaries ever made. So, and I know that, every time I go to a film festival anywhere, somebody comes up to me and says, this is my favorite documentary I've ever seen. It really does affect people. But again, I just wanted to let people know it's a real roller coaster ride. I mean, you will never, ever, ever see anything like this again in terms of, I guarantee you'll remember it for the rest of your life. It's a very powerful film.
Now, you're going to be speaking on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock at the Aztec Cafe, which is a lovely little venue. What are you going to be talking about?
Well, I've made about a dozen films, documentaries, and I will cover the course of my career and actually especially for people who are filmmakers or want to know about documentaries or know how to make documentaries, I sort of give a lot of information about sort of behind the scenes about how I actually, put these films together. So, I mean, on the one hand, I mean, if for anybody interested in actually becoming a filmmaker or who is a filmmaker, I think there's a lot of information there. And then for people who are, interested in film as subject matter, you kind of get a sense of how these projects are put together. Because documentaries, as I'm sure you know, are an incredible challenge. And, I mean, I love making them, but there's a lot of tricks you have to sort of do to actually pull something together from real life.
Right, right,
and not to follow sort of the reality programming sort of cliche ways of approaching it.
Kirby Dick is a writer, director, and producer. Two of his films will be screened at the Santa Fe Independent Film Festival. This film is not yet rated. Will be on Friday, October 21st at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. And Sick: The Life and Death of Bob Flanagan, Supermasochist, is Friday, October 21st at 5 o'clock at Warehouse 21. And he'll be receiving the American Filmmaker Award at the Independent Film Festival. And again, we'll be speaking at the Aztec Cafe on Saturday morning. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you. I look forward to coming to Santa Fe.
I would like to introduce, joining us by telephone from Guatemala, Veronica Riedel. She is the writer, producer, and director of the film Cápsulas, which screens at the Santa Fe Film Festival on Friday, October 21st at 4 in the afternoon at the CCA. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you. Now, this is an extraordinary film with an extraordinary story behind it. I screened it last night at home. I mean, it is scary. It's riveting. It feels very real. It takes place in Guatemala. It's about families of different classes and this whole question of what class is somebody even in, trying to survive, trying to make it. Part of that is through selling drugs. There's a 12-year-old boy who is staging videos and making little videos and selling them, and he's trying to find his long-lost father. It's a great story. What are the origins of the story? How did you come up with this plot?
Well, I have three children, and my children are 12. Well, right now they're 14 and 15 and 18, but when I started the movie, they were 12 years old and 13. And I am worried about the future of our society in the Latin American countries. And the origin is actually the story of a boy in my children's school that got his parents murdered because they were involved in drug dealing. And one would think that you have your kids in this school where it's protected, and actually the best friend could be the son of a drug dealer and could be involved in violent situations. So starting from that, I started evolving this story because my son filmed videos. So I combined a few stories. And what I did is combining the story of any kid in this country with realities of other kids, I came up with a whole story of Cápsulas.
To what extent is that reality, the reality of ubiquitous drugs and drug selling and all of that, part of daily life where you live?
Well, it's very real because just 3 days ago, another parent's, boy's parents were murdered, both parents and uncle, of my children's soccer playing team mate. I mean, I don't know how to say it in English, but this kid plays soccer with my kids, and this happened last week again. So it happens. Now, the involvement with this boy and what he's asked to do, so not to give the movie, right, happens. And there has been a lot of findings in the way they pass drugs, mothers and children, and even dead people pass drugs through customs. So it is very, very real.
You made this film as an independent film, as a labor of love, on a very low budget. I mean, once you wrote the script, then how did you go about getting it produced, finding the actors, and doing the production?
Okay, I worked 10 years in my artwork because I'm a photographer too, but my career is film. And since there's not much investment in films in Guatemala, it was really frustrating for me to think that I would never do a feature film. So I worked in my artwork, and a lot of collectors that believed in me, my work in photography talks about justice. So some of these collectors read my screenplay, and they believed in me, so selling my artwork, I could get some money to do it. So having the budget already set, I started producing, and I went to UCLA and to the University of Miami, and I, thank God, I was really well educated and trained to do films and worked in some films. I really took my time and energy to do this production very punctual, and knowing that every penny counted. And I got together some people that have worked in a few films here and brought someone from the States, a director of photography. And then everything was done in Guatemala, except the actress is from Colombia because she had a little more experience. But all the actors there are new or theater actors. So the directing also, I went to some classes in Los Angeles. And I just follow orders from my teachers, and that's what it came out.
That's what I was wondering, was whether you had used theater actors, because they were by and large very good actors. It didn't have that kind of amateur actor feel that a lot of first-time independent movies have.
Yes, I figured that out, and it really worked. And I think my classes in Los Angeles, directing classes, really worked because I had a lot of, well, not a lot of time, but like a month practicing with the actors. And there were some that had a lot of theater things, you know, like acting at theater. So we worked on it, and I was really strict on that. I knew that anything I was going to put in the screen meant everything, all my 10, 15 years of work, of my artwork. So it really, I took it really seriously to try to do the best.
Now, you are one of the only, or perhaps the only, woman director, woman filmmaker in Guatemala. Is that right?
Yes, actually, yes. I know there's a few other women trying to do certain things that have done a few shorts. But it's really difficult, first for a filmmaker in general, man or woman in this country, because we don't have any government help. And sadly, they don't feel like art and culture are important. We're still a third world country, and that's a fact. But we have wonderful artists and directors here that I think if they would have more help, wonderful things would come out from Guatemala. And some women have one short, maybe, and if they would have the chance to have some money to do a feature, they would go ahead and do it. I think that would be the case.
So is there a film industry in Guatemala?
Yes, it is starting, but it's very difficult and very small.
So this film, Cápsulas, has it been shown widely? Has it been shown in Guatemala and Latin America?
Actually, I'm going to premiere it on February 17th. Here, the newspaper and TV has been really great because they've called me to do, like, every week I have some sort of interview. And so people know around the country that I exist, which is great, because people have called me through internet or through Facebook and asked me how did I do it, that I'm an example for them. Actually, being a mother also means how could you do everything, you know? So women are, like, calling me, and people are realizing that good things are coming out from Guatemala, and Cápsulas is really a reflection of our society that I think people should come and see. And it's a reflection of all of Latin American society right now, because people are closing their eyes to what's really happening and not really knowing what to do. Like in Mexico, the drug cartels are very heavily involved. And, you know, it could be your neighbor, and you could go out in the street and get murdered for anything. So it's very difficult in the countries now, but this is a disease, really, that's coming into the society, and it's getting into the families. And that's the point with Cápsulas, that it could be in your family, and maybe you could put your hands in your eyes and be blind to it because you don't really want to see the reality and act towards it. Nobody's really acting because it's almost impossible to do anything.
And the film also deals with problems of not only the drug selling and smuggling and all of that, but addiction itself and how that can ruin families.
Exactly.
So you have children who make videos. I guess it's kind of the family business, being behind a camera.
Well, it's like I come from a family of artists, of singers and an artist, and one of my sons just started doing videos, and he actually is into sports, so he does sports videos. He does longboard skating, which is kind of dangerous, but he cuts his own videos, and that's where I got the idea, and then I turned it into a drama of other people's lives. And then what you can see also is that the society in our countries is very complex because there's different classes, and it's still very difficult to unite everybody, but I think it would be great that people would really be in peace with each other. That's why the storyline of the maid's children and the friendship with the main character, Fonzie, the 12-year-old boy, is important, but at the end, they don't have the same realities. So that's why they, you know, separate.
Right, exactly. I mean, it's such a, in a way, it's the universal story of children who are all alike and they're all friends, but then divided by these artificial boundaries of class and economics that are imposed on them by adults.
Yes, that's a marvel of it, but it is really universal, the whole film, too, about greed, about friendship, about realities, about love, of misunderstandings in marriages. For example, also I come from a, my parents are divorced, and I think it really affected me, so that's the element between the Fonzie's parents, that who's right, the mother or the father, and the mother thinks one way and the father another way. Although it wasn't my reality with this exact situation of these parents, but it was always like, well, mom is right or dad is right. And they're totally different. So where do you go? And at the end, what I say with the film is that really, if they would leave children alone with all these stigmas or lies, children have a more humble and honest way of seeing life and taking decisions. That's why the end of the movie is like it is, because probably the wiser person at the end is the boy and not the parents.
Right, exactly. We're talking to Veronica Riedel about the film Cápsulas. Now, do you have any favorite filmmakers or cinematic inspirations that went into this movie?
Actually, I love every good film. This is a question they ask me a lot, and it's just that every good filmmaker is really wonderful. When the story works, the story works. So I really love stories that work. That, what I mean with that, it doesn't matter what filmmaker is, when the film grabs my heart and gives me something and I changed a little bit in myself or realize that there's something that I take for granted in life, that's my favorite filmmaker, which could be anybody, but the story is what it should work. That I hope this story works in people's hearts, like just realizing that things are not as simple as we think and that we should pay attention to things that we don't pay attention to every day.
So you have now made this film. How are you going about getting it distributed, both in the United States and in Latin America and beyond?
Well, it's pretty difficult. I did get a distributor in the United States, and he's waiting for me to get out the movie in February here in Guatemala, because if it's sold to, let's say, cable companies or TV, people pirate the movie. You know, they copy the film and they sell it immediately in our Latin countries. It's really bad. And so he's waiting to sell the movie to these companies after February 17th. Then I have to look for distributors in Latin America and in Europe also to sell it. And actually, the way that things are going now is through internet. So I'm really looking for a company that would distribute it through internet or video on demand.
Veronica Riedel is the writer, director, and producer of the film Cápsulas, which screens as part of the Santa Fe Film Festival, and you can see it here in Santa Fe on Friday, October 21st at 4 in the afternoon at the CCA, the Center for Contemporary Arts. Veronica, thank you so much for being with us on KSFR.
Thank you so much.
I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Josh Klein. He is writer and director of the short film The Incredible Voyage of Captain Hook, which screens as part of the Santa Fe Film Festival on Saturday, October 21st at the CCA. It's at 12:45 in the afternoon. It's part of a feature of short movies at the Santa Fe Film Festival, and we're joined by Nicholas Ballas, who plays the amazing Captain Hook. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi.
Thank you so much.
So this is a very funny and interesting little, you know, short film. Captain Hook, is it the real Captain Hook from literature, is running around the deserts of New Mexico. He gets picked up by the cops and ends up in a mental institution. What was your inspiration, Josh, for this story?
Well, obviously the source material. And I always enjoyed the story of Peter Pan and Captain Hook, but not for Peter Pan, more for Captain Hook. And as far as I wanted to do something different, and I wanted to make Captain Hook a protagonist and then update the story and kind of flip it on its ear, so to speak. I was always attracted to this character, Captain Hook, who was basically being picked on by a kid. More or less. So, you know, and I was able to pull from, you know, as I get older, and I've said this before during some of our talks that we've had at some screenings, but, you know, as I get older, I kind of identify not with Peter Pan, and, you know, a lot of adults have problems growing up, and, you know, you have the Peter Pan syndrome and everything, but I identify with Captain Hook. I get older, and the world seems to be getting younger on me. And it doesn't sit well. So, that was the impetus for that.
That's very interesting. I've never heard anybody say they identified with Captain Hook before.
Yeah.
What about you, Nicholas? How do you feel that character in the film that you made?
Well, the character is an amazing challenge on many, many levels because although he is a fictional character, it can't be fictional for the actor. It has to be as brutally real as, you know, as my own existence. So the question that is provoked by the film, you know, is this fiction? Is this reality? The actor has to delve pretty deeply into that and give as much, you know, flesh, blood, and tears to this character as possible, and that was a huge and frankly delicious challenge for me, because it really gave me the opportunity to fully flesh out this person on a very different level than the caricatures that we may have seen in the past of, you know, who Captain Hook has been. And the whole concept of being institutionalized is something that I've spent a fair amount of my own life in some proximity to, and my wife is a psychotherapist, which helps. and the whole concept of what sanity is and what insanity is was a real lovely kind of dance to do for this film. And Josh really made it incredibly easy to kind of go as far as I needed to go into this character and explore who he is.
Thank you.
Yeah, I have to say, I mean, the beautiful thing about cinema is that you can have whatever reality you want. And so you're thinking as you watch the film, is this some crazy guy, or is it really possible to step out of children's literature into the 21st century? And I totally bought it. I mean, from beginning to end, I thought, this is the real Captain Hook. You can't fool me.
Uh-huh. Right.
Score one for the good side. Yay.
And I was wondering if you had. I mean, it reminded me of the film Don Juan DeMarco with Johnny Depp. Was that one of your inspirations?
Definitely not. And not because I didn't like that movie. But if I did have a cinema inspiration, it was 12 Monkeys would probably. It's a Terry Gilliam film. And Bruce Willis is somebody, may or may not be somebody from the future going back to try and save the world. That was definitely inspiration that I had, where you kind of, but it's the same idea, that, and you have a movie like K-Pax where you take a look at characters who may or may not exist, and they're kind of struggling with their own identities.
There are places in the film where there are kind of memory sequences and what you might call flashbacks to Peter Pan and being on the ship, and the way you did those, which was, a kind of, what would you call it, hybrid of animation and cinema, was really creative. I just love that. Tell us about how you did that.
We have a really, really talented animator in town. His name is Jeff True. He's gone to South by Southwest and Sundance with his own short animations. And I just approached him one day and I said, I really like your style. Would you want to work with us? And, you know, short of begging, I did a pretty good job of convincing him, and we sat together, drew up some storyboards, and the script was pretty detailed as far as what I wanted it to look like, as far as the action. And he brought it to another level. I mean, the guy is so talented, yeah, it's really kind of it's a blending of animation green screen that we had done, it worked really well. And I really wanted that look because you didn't know whether or not he was crazy or he was telling the truth. So I wanted to go into Captain Hook's mind and lead the audience, in whichever way that they wanted to come out thinking. So in the end of the movie, you're kind of I wanted it to be an open-ended question, is this or is this not? And the animation really helped kind of blur that line of reality. If we went ahead and we shot something, well, A, it would have been extremely expensive to do, but if we had shot everything live action, it could kind of give away too much at that point of the movie. And that's really, that animation is kind of like the crux or the turn where the story kind of gets moving into a different direction. So,
why did you choose to do a half-hour film?
Well, that's a good question. I've been making short films for a while, and as standalones, right? So you have a short film and you do it. I kind of have graduated to another level where, or I think I have, without sounding egotistic. I wanted to do something that had legs. So basically what you saw was, and what people will see, is a first act of a larger screenplay or a larger film.
So glad to hear that, because at the end, which we won't give away on the radio right now, I was really left wondering what happens next.
Yeah. Oh, Nico?
Yo.
As a side note, did you read the latest version of the script?
It's fantastic.
Oh, don't. You should throw it out. Use it as firewood.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the behind-the-scenes work of filmmakers.
Yeah, I sent you the wrong script, and I've been I got coverage from a guy who loved it, but thought we could go even darker. You were just talking about the challenge of playing this role, and then the identity issues that you have. So we do a lot more of that. So it's a lot more meaty. Yeah, and it's a lot less funny, though, is the thing. So, there is humor that's built into the short that you've seen and that people will see, but the feature script is pretty dark, and it goes into places that, the character should go. So,
very interesting. And so will you, when you make the feature, you'll shoot the whole thing again?
Yes, absolutely. And we will be using Nico. That is something that, everybody has, said needs to happen. I mean, he's so talented and he brought so much, and there were so many layers to his acting, and I mean, you really made it cook, Nico. It's and I've said it before, but I'd like to say it to whoever's listening, like, go to see it, because it's a really interesting short, but Nico puts on a clinic, so you should check it out. I mean, it's really, really amazing work, and couldn't be prouder of him.
The film is.
You made it really easy for that to happen for me, Josh, and to a certain extent, you left me alone. And when there were points that I needed guidance, you were right there, anticipating those. And that's I know you haven't done that many film directing gigs, but you were. God, I couldn't have asked for anything more.
The film is The Incredible Voyage of Captain Hook. It's a short film, part of the Santa Fe Film Festival. You can see it on Saturday, October 21st at 12:45 at the CCA here in Santa Fe. Josh Klein, writer and director, Nicholas Ballas, actor, thank you both so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me.
Okay.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe radio cafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe, and my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, then local news, then jazz.